Welcome back to the Yahoo Fantasy Hoops Podcast. I am merely Andy Behrens. I'm back from a week of vacation. I am joined, as ever, by Dalton Del Don. It is a busy week in the NBA. There's a lot going on over the last couple days. Dalton, what's up? How you doing?
I'm doing well, Andy. Nice to have you back. Any stories from your vacation? You were missed. Any All-Star game follow-up? I know it's been a while, but you were there personally. And another reason for me to give the excuse of saying I had a BAM at plus 950 in the skills competition, in case you didn't hear. But any good stories,
man,
since you've been
is
out?
That right?
That is right. Yeah, that might be my greatest claim to fame recently. But forget the Niners futures 40-1 bet in July. BAM at nearly 10-1 in the skills competition. Forget the fact that my reasoning was thinking that the big men were going to be on one side, so he sneakily had an advantage game theory, and he was immediately Drew Spencer Dinwiddie right away. Forget that. The process was wrong, but the outcome was luckily right. But anyway, how was it in person, man?
Yeah, I gotta say it was just great. Like it was a pretty awesome experience. And if anybody, like, if you have the opportunity, any listener has the opportunity to participate or attend any portion of All-Star Weekend, like, it was fun. And I'm, you know, this may shock you, but I don't necessarily travel in celebrity circles, so I didn't get any like A-list treatment.
It does shock me.
But it should shock you. But it was great. It was a really good time. I think I was telling you a couple of weeks ago, I was really looking forward to the Rising Stars game, and that did not disappoint. Like, it became, you know, kind of an in-game dunk contest in all the best ways. It was one takeaway for me was that the event itself, and I had not attended an NBA All-Star Weekend before, is a little bit more corporate than I was ready for. A lot of giveaway tickets. There were, like, the first level in particular was so empty at the start of the Rising Stars game, which to me was just nuts because it was everybody I wanted to see. It was Zion. It was Ja. It was Luka. It was Trae Young. Like, that was a great roster of players, and so that was a little funky. But the next two nights were just spectacular. That was an all time dunk contest. We had pretty good vantage point on all of the dunking and Buddy Hield, and it was just great. And then the game itself was super fun too. I thought the fourth quarter was going to be, I was a little bit nervous about it, but I had met somebody who works for the NBA the night before the All-Star game, and they were really excited to see the way the sort of fourth quarter scoring and end game was going to go. And man, that guy was totally right. Like, it was, I thought that was great. I don't know what your thoughts were on the finish to the game, but I loved it.
Yeah, with Chase Center being new, hopefully I do get a chance to see an All-Star Weekend, you know, next few years. At least they do that with Super Bowls, with new places, usually reward the city. I absolutely love that Elam ending, that fourth quarter, to the point of I'm like now championing the whole all NBA switching to it. Like, it was so much fun.
Yeah.
I couldn't be more wrong as far as, oh, this is going to be quick. Do the people not realize All-Star game of 24 points is going to be over like that? It was 15 minutes of gameplay and there were no commercials. So it was so fun to watch on TV. The competitiveness, I get it was an All-Star game in just one game, but if you don't, and if, who cares? The free throw ending made it even better. What if he had missed both of them? And by the way, if you don't like games ending in free throws, you should love this ending because it creates right. The opposite of that. You wouldn't want to foul. So I'm like all in. I think it's like the greatest thing ever. And to me, it's like we should be using it. It's better than what we
Well, the game
using.
The game nearly ended on the Harden three,
right.
For which he was called, got the charge call. Lowry got the charge call, which was awesome. I have no issue with a game ending on a free throw at all. Like, that doesn't bother me. There was a lot of tension in the arena at that moment. The crowd was great. The only thing that would have gotten to me is if one side had won like the first three quarters. You know, like, it was great having the kids who were, you know, the recipients of the charity and all that. It was great having them on the floor because it kind of overcame that corporate element to the crowd, right? It was great having them on the floor, but man, that would have been like, if one of those charities wasn't raking in any money, that would have been bad. It would have been bad luck. But I thought the ending was great. I was super happy with it.
No, for sure. No, I'm seriously, I'm a fan of that ending. So let's get a starting five, man.
We have a busy show. We have a lot of stuff going on. Everybody's hurt. Like upper tier one stars are injured right now. We're not even going to be able to get to stuff like Lillard still not playing. Kemba Walker is still out. Clint Capella, we have no ETA on him. Like, all those things are important. But we got to start with a huge injury from Wednesday night, actually. Joel Embiid goes out with a shoulder injury that looked like my God, he was in a lot of pain as soon as it happened. I think it was a collision with Zizek, if I'm not mistaken, against Cleveland. We already know, like, as we're speaking, this is Thursday afternoon, and this is one of those classic scenarios where it's very likely that, like, an hour after the show, we're going to know everything there is to know about this injury. We don't know a lot right now. They're calling it a shoulder sprain. He was going for an MRI. We're probably going to have results of that fairly soon. We know he's not going to play on Thursday. By his immediate reaction, and that, you know, I think they had to take a foul, and he just ran to the locker room, like, I think we have to expect this to be more than like a one night thing. Al Horford obviously benefits in fantasy terms, but this is quite a blow for a Sixers team that was already without some key pieces.
You said it, though. I'm sure there'll be revelatory information as soon as we hit stop on the record here. But Embiid, it's a bunch of values with 76ers jumping all over the place. I mean, Horford was borderline droppable on the bench. And then they lose their two stars, and now he's, you know, his value shot up. Embiid, we'll get to the Simmons injury next, but without Simmons, Embiid's usage rate was like 37% this season, tied for second in the league with Giannis. So his value looked like he was just going to be a monster, and now this injury. So, yeah, the team does not look encouraged with either, but maybe they're just being dramatic. So it's a wait-and-see approach for now, but definitely a boost in value for Al Horford, Kyle O'Quinn in deeper leagues, and yeah, guys like Tobias Harris and Richardson are obviously going to step up as well.
Yeah, I've got Horford in one league. It's a weekly transaction league, and of course, I haven't, you know, like, he's not an ideal start. I haven't been playing him. He's been on my bench. I've thought about dropping him so many times, but it's like there's still some value to the brand name, right? So I just haven't done it. I've luckily I have enough garbage players on that team that I've been able to drop other guys, right? But you gotta think that Al Horford just playing the role of a true center now for however long this is, whether it's 3 games, whether it's 10 games, I don't know. A huge boost to his value. Hopefully he can get back to double doubling.
Absolutely huge boost for him for sure. Hopefully you're lucky enough to have as bad a team as Andy Barron's. You could drop some other people before him. Simmons back injury, the nerve impinge, he looks like what was crying out of the x-ray room. I mean, that doesn't look great either. Shake Milton's the guy I grabbed him in my home league. He looked pretty good the other night, and he's starting and he's getting the minutes and the shots up. So he would be the actionable the guy to grab for me. It's Shake Milton. You tell me if you think otherwise. There's some, you know, Korkmaz, Furkan's out there. One of the takeaways is Philly, we'll get to this later, but they're projected. They have a really bad playoff schedule, I think, with just 2 games in week 21. And who knows? Maybe that doesn't matter anymore. But yeah, just a disaster with the injury situation in Philadelphia.
Yeah, you took us right into our second topic here. Is going to be Ben Simmons. Just what a double blow for Philadelphia. I'm no longer feeling particularly good, by the way, about my 18-1 ticket on the Sixers to win it all. The Simmons situation seems bad, and it's one of those where I know the initial timeline was they were going to reevaluate him in 2 weeks. And of course, anybody who's been a fantasy player or sports fan for any length of time knows that, like, reevaluation does not mean he's coming back in 2 weeks. Nerve impingement, back issue. And you've said, I think, both of the key names. I've added, in fact, as soon as the Simmons news broke, I'd added Shake Milton in a couple leagues. I believe I dropped Ish Smith both times. I'd have to look. Nobody cares about my garbage drops. But, like, Shake Milton could be a thing. He was about the only player who looked lively and looked engaged in the Cavs game. I thought he had 20 points in that one. Pretty good shooter. He's shooting about, I think it's 39% from three so far this year. He's a really good percentage three-point shooter at the college level. He played at SMU. I was looking at his college stats a little bit earlier, like 43-44% from three as a collegiate player. So I think the threes are going to hold up. I think there's a little bit of playmaking there. He's obviously not going to be 20 points a night, but can he be 14 points a night with 5-6 assists? I think that's definitely in play.
Yeah, I know the steal percentage is impressive. 37 minutes the last game, 14 field goal attempts. You mentioned the three-point shooting. So, yeah, given the Sixers' situation right now, if you're in a competitive league, I'm definitely rushing to grab Shake Milton. Totally agree with you there. So I actually did about a week and a half make a decent size for me futures bet on the Bucks at minus 150 to win the East. I'm sorry, man. I don't know what to tell you. These two injuries happen right afterward. The Celtics are definitely a worry as well. But the more I thought about it, I'm like, why do I keep wondering if the Lakers or Clippers are going to beat them in the finals when I'm sure? And I look, minus 150. We'll see Bledsoe how he does in the playoffs and stay healthy. But that was my bet, and then this happened with Philly. So yeah, rough, man. I don't like to see it at all, though.
Yeah, it's a separate topic, but like, who are you most afraid of in the East? I suppose
it's the Celtics now. I mean, yeah, it's a Celtics. Tatum looks like a freaking monster, and they're playing well. So it's the Celtics for me.
I don't know that I feel like Philadelphia just seemed so well, just the way they've built their roster, it seemed so uniquely built to be able to do some of what Toronto did to Giannis last year. When they're healthy, they have so much size that they can throw at you. I would think you'd have to give Toronto a puncher's chance, right? Especially if Gasol can come back. But even then, you're obviously lacking, you know, one of the best defensive players on earth in Kawhi Leonard. So that's probably not. That's what, like a 10% chance, 15% chance, something like that. Maybe you fear Miami a little bit, but I feel like Miami came up a player short at the trade deadline.
Yeah, Philadelphia, I liked your futures bet when you did it, by the way. And they do have upside defensively in the playoffs if they were to get healthy, obviously. But man, if Toronto did win the Eastern Conference without Kawhi, Nick Nurse is the man. I mean, that would be so, so impressive. But to me, yeah, I mean, Miami, just such crazy home road splits, though. And that would go away, theoretically, in a series that they wouldn't be partying, you know, and they stay in the city for a few days. So, no, that really does. That does lessen in playoff series.
You know, something I don't think that we've talked about on the pod at all necessarily this year is the crazy home road split for the Sixers.
Insane.
They're a 300 team on the road. Like they are playing at a level that you would just not think that as a playoff caliber team. If you only saw their road record, you'd be like, well, that's, you know, they should tank. Are they tanking? They might be tanking.
Yeah. 300 there's no on the thin road. Air in Denver to point to, or South Beach in Miami to point to. So what is it? It's just motivation. I mean, that's a weird, right? I mean, there's something weird with that dramatic 27-2 at home. And you mentioned on the road 30. That's crazy.
It's too dramatic to seem like a fluke to me, but I'm normally super dismissive of home road stats like that because I don't see any reason why a good team should be that bad on the road. It normally seems fluky to me. I kind of ignored it for most of the first half of the season, but man, they are legit terrible on the road, and it is one of those rare cases where I don't know what's contributing to it. I don't know what life on the road in the NBA is like, but like, my God, that's awful.
Yeah, I know it's been a weird fit all around with the new pieces. And it's a tough blow. Fantasy owners and, you know, if you're a 76ers fan, I mean, it sucks, the injuries. And Embiid, I hope he's not just going to be injury prone his whole career. But boost in fantasy value for Al Horford, and go grab Shake Milton off the waiver wire.
Yeah, you also mentioned Furkan Korkmaz. I'm looking at a tweet right now from our friend Mike Gallagher at RotoWorld. He had a good nugget on Korkmaz. His per 36 stats without Embiid and Simmons this season. It's not a huge sample in terms of minutes, but 21.1 points, 3.1 boards, 2.3 assists, a steal, and 4.5 three-pointers a game. So, again, small sample. But he's a perfectly relevant player too. If you can't get Milton, I would definitely take a look at Korkmaz.
For sure, especially if you need threes.
Let's stick with injuries because we got another big one. And maybe this is, you know, maybe this is a one day thing. Maybe this is just a night off. It's a version of load management. But LeBron James has a groin issue, coming off just a terrific game in what was a really fun game, all things considered, against the Pelicans. He comes out of that with a groin malfunction of as yet unknown severity. He's going to miss at least one game. What is your level of worry? What should, as a LeBron owner, what should my level of worry be?
This is another one of those that's going to clear up probably right afterward. But right now, I'm not too big of a concern because he finished the last game and he looked strong. And there's a pic out there. He even put on his Instagram of him dunking on Josh Hart. And that might be where he hurt his groin mid-dunk on that.
It's a bad look for the person getting dunked on. It's a rough.
Very, 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 very bad look. So could be load management, you know, resting against the, you know, the loaded Warriors team. That is their opponent here. So I'm not too concerned. But let's say he does sit out a few games. AD's usage rate jumps from 29% to nearly 35%, which would be near league high. And Kuzma, the other beneficiary, jumps like 4% his usage rate too. So, but it's a wait and see approach, and hopefully it's not much. I don't expect it to be too severe. Although it is the groin. The one concern is the groin was the problem last year.
As for playmaking, can I interest you at all in Alex Caruso? Can I interest you in Rajon Rondo for a night? For an evening of pleasure with Rajon Rondo, does it do anything for you?
Absolutely, yeah, sure. If you're in DFS and the price is right, Rondo, yeah, every now and then some big games and without LeBron, sure, in the right spot. But I don't expect this to be a multiple game thing.
I gotta say, I know the Lakers have been like the center of the NBA world so far this year, but it had been a while since I'd just watched a full, like, start to finish Lakers game, and that Pelicans tilt was, that thing was fun. And I gotta say, like, Caruso had some of the best highlight plays in that thing. Like, I feel like he's a little bit of a punchline, but guy's pretty legit.
Athletic. Yeah.
The between the legs pass to James for the dunk that so embarrassed the dunky. Like, that was just great. Like, he's a lot of fun.
Yeah. No, for sure. Pelicans, they might even have a better roster, though, if you look at that, man. They're an interesting team. I hope they do sneak into the playoffs, because you look at that top to bottom, obviously the Lakers so top-heavy. By the way, look back at just how good is LeBron. I mean, obviously season ended last year with the injury. With the season before that, he takes that loaded Warriors team into overtime in the playoffs and breaks his hand. What if he doesn't break his hand that series? Like, the guy, just look at the mismatch of rosters. Compare that. I mean, I don't know. It's going to be a fun postseason. Let's put it that way.
Even not to diminish exactly what the Lakers have done so far this year. They're obviously a great team. Anthony Davis is obviously a wonderful player, but like, you look up and down that roster, and that is a stars and scrubsy sort of team, right? Like, it's not, that's LeBron and AD, and then some dudes. And there's not a lot there that is notable. And for them to be not only the one seed in the West right now, but like, clearly the one seed, I think they have a 5-game lead now over Denver. It is a really impressive achievement. You don't hear a lot of, at least maybe you do in LA, in the rest of the world, you don't hear a lot of LeBron as MVP buzz, but it doesn't seem crazy to me. I mean, it's obviously Giannis's award to lose at this point, but this has been quite a season considering age and everything else.
Oh yeah, no, LeBron's he leads the NBA in defensive real plus minus right now too. I mean, it is absolutely crazy, man. I mean, yeah, running away with the West. I thought they'd be right there with the Clippers battling for the 4 and 5 seed, just because even though I picked them, they're the two best teams in the West. I just thought that they'd just take coast through the regular season, but very, very impressive. You're right. It's LeBron. What more can you say? He's good at basketball.
Yeah. So as we speak, they're 44-12. Like, 44-12 is that's pretty legit. That's not that far behind the Bucks, who are on a near historic pace. It's just really impressive, because I got to say, I didn't look at that roster like preseason and think this is the runaway, no doubt about it, number one seed in the West. I thought they were a contender for the one seed. I didn't think they'd care about it, actually.
No, I didn't either. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm giving MVP to Giannis, but I'm with you. LeBron is just right there in the conversation.
Okay, so we've hit the biggest injury news. Let's get to something good. Let's get to something fun. Let's talk about your Warriors. You mentioned LeBron's got a game coming up against the Warriors that he's going to miss. Not immediately, but by Sunday, and by the next time we reconvene for this podcast, Steph Curry will have played some games. He is expected to return Sunday. There were some murky comments the other day from Steve Kerr about when exactly it would happen and the need for Curry to continue practicing. But the goal had been for a long time, for several weeks, had been March 1st. And it sure seems like he's on track for March 1st. He returns to a team that is firmly Andrew Wiggins' team at this point. So how does Steph Curry fit in?
A lot to unpack here, but so it actually wasn't my favorite news of the week last week when Curry revealed that he might be dealing with permanent nerve damage in that left hand. I guess it makes sense. That's why he missed 3 months instead of the usual two with the broken hand. I guess go figure. That's what happens when a large man like Aaron Baines, you know, falls on it. Says he's getting used to the new normal and you see him shaking it. I don't know, man. It's really not great. I mean, the guy uses his left a lot, the ball handler, but yeah. At least it's not his shooting hand, and hopefully it eventually does go away. But I think he's going to be totally fine in minutes. You know, obviously not going to use him too much, but if you have him in fantasy leagues, you're obviously using Stephen Curry. But this is just a nice excuse to talk some more Andrew Wiggins. I'm not making this up. I have a jersey and I got an email and I talked about it last week. I was going to put it on right now mid-podcast and I got an email today saying it's supposed to arrive today. So it's like it's been 3 weeks and it's literally going to arrive today. Maybe the doorbell will ring in the background as we record this. But
how excited would that
birthday.
Be if we can get live video of you donning the Wiggins jersey?
Happy 25th birthday, Andrew Wiggins. It was Sunday, I know, because it's both mine. It's February 23rd. A few just facts. I'm only shooting off facts here, Barons. Since the trade, the T-Wolves are by far the worst defensive team in the NBA, not even close.
Who could have seen that coming?
All these stats, after a bad game, Wiggins actually, it was unclear if he was capable of having one, but he did have a bad game. But even including that, all these stats, courtesy of cleaning the glass with the Warriors. Effective field goal percentage, he's in the 79th percentile among wings. Block percentage, 98th percentile. Steal percentage, 90th percentile. Points per shot attempt, which is basically true shooting percentage, 81st percentile. With Minnesota, his previous career high, he never was even in the 55th. Usually it's like in the 20s. This is all without Curry, the player that makes life easier on teammates, maybe more than any other in the league. Andrew Wiggins.
And he's not just
speechless?
Your feeling is that he's not just on a hot streak here. This is Warriors culture, claiming him, elevating him.
Unless Giannis becomes possibility in the trade down the line, then he can go quicker than he can say anything. But no, seriously, Wiggins is, anyway, those are some impressive numbers, and I felt like I had to get them out there before they all go downhill south.
So you're drinking that Kool-Aid that the genius of the trade was really about matching salaries in a deal for Giannis.
Yeah, well, that has been the rumor, but light years ahead, Barons. I just pointing out facts that you look at him compared to wings, his peers among the league, and he's just dominating ever since he's put on a Dubs jersey.
Obviously this is a huge celebration, and everyone here is excited that Steph Curry is coming back. Who are we dropping in fantasy because Steph Curry is coming back?
Yeah, if you're in a deeper league and you had Jordan Poole, can probably let go of him, Kai Bowman. I actually dropped Damian Lee in Friends and Family. Looking forward, I think he is probably going to lose value if you're not in a deeper league. And I will mention one guy I do not drop is Marquese Chriss. You know, he's been the number 38 fantasy player over the last month. This is a month's game to sample now. So he's been a nice find in an otherwise really thin roster. But yeah, Damian Lee would be the guy fantasy-wise that's going to lose the most value with Curry's return.
I gotta say, I got that Chris thing totally wrong. Had every opportunity to add him in multiple leagues, didn't do it. Like I've been worn down by the Warriors this year. Like the Wizards have an argument, but I feel like between the Wizards and the Warriors, they have fed every waiver wire column all year. Right? Like it's just a new guy each week, and I missed the boat on Chris. He's been great. You're right.
No, for sure. There's been a lot of misses. I was old. Eric Paschal hasn't been that great fantasy-wise. Totally. It's made lives easier for waiver wire writers. But ultimately, the main find has been Marquese Chriss. And he was widely available. He was undrafted in all leagues.
Okay. Topic number five. I've been itching to get to it. Probably the two hottest players in the NBA right now. Bradley Beal and my man Coby White. If you're starting a franchise right now, but these guys go 1-2 in some order. I don't know who you taking first.
Yeah. So I got to talk Wiggins. You go ahead and talk Coby White. I mean, wow. I mean, career high 35 points, came against a tough OKC backcourt. First Bulls player to knock down 5 threes in 3 straight games. And I believe the first Bulls rookie since Jordan to score at least 30 points in 3 straight games. So go Barons, go nuts.
He's one of the only, I forget how many it is. There's only like 3 or 4 guys ever who have scored 30 in 3 consecutive games coming off the bench, which is kind of ridiculous. Right. I wish I could do for Coby White what you just did for Andrew Wiggins, but I can't quite sell it that hard. He's still like, I've been in the arena for a number of games in which Coby White is just purely no-showed, right? And it's never for lack of shot attempts. He's still shooting less than 39% on the season. So I'm not full, like, he's fun. And especially in a season like this, if you're a Bulls fan, where you're just going to have to sit through some nonsense occasionally, and it's been Zach LaVine and maybe nobody else on any given night. It's fun when he just goes on a heat. Like, he's one of the more tremendous hot cold players in the NBA right now, right? Because, like, if he hits that first three, some stuff is going down, and he's gonna jack five more. And, you know, he tends to run hot and cold in a way that we rarely see. So he's been really fun. I'm gonna be really surprised if it continues, I'm afraid, though, because we have, at some point, Markkanen comes back soon, Porter comes back soon. Those guys are gonna eat up a lot of shots. You know, Carter returns. Like, there's a lot of people who are gonna claim a lot of shots that are coming back. And Coby White obviously has to play, and they can fit him into whatever mix it is they think is gonna be their starting five next year. But there's not gonna be unlimited shots for him very soon. So as a fantasy asset, like, how do you not add a guy who scored 30 plus in three straight games? Of course you have to. He's among the most added players in Yahoo leagues right now, and deservedly so. But I think he's going to be among the most dropped players probably in 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's probably makes sense. He's safer in points leagues. But man, he's fun to watch. He's very, very quick. He's living up to the hype in that area. What are your thoughts on keeping him firmly on that bench role? You're right about the Bulls eventually getting healthier, but what about right now?
As long as he's closing, like, I never really get hung up on who's starting. And I know some players do. They shouldn't. Like, it's so much more meaningful. Like, are you on the floor closing quarters? Are you on the floor closing the game? Like, that is a much bigger deal. We saw him on the floor to close the game the other night. Like, when he goes off like this, he is absolutely going to be in the closing lineup. So that it would annoy me if we, you know, if we get late in a lost season and we're not seeing Coby White, like, playing whatever high leverage minutes this team can possibly find for the rest of the season. Like, Coby White should be playing those in a, you know, the most competitive environment the Bulls can possibly create for him. So I hope that happens. I'm never going to get fired up about a guy starting or not starting as long as he's playing.
Sure.
28 plus minutes a game. It's kind of how I feel.
No, totally makes sense. I'm happy for you, and at least some excitement to watch the end of this season. No, I mean, he's balling out there. He's got some good swag too. I like watching him.
Super fun, really charismatic player. That's really fun as well. And for somebody who's not obviously, like, by NBA standards, Coby White is not unusually athletic. You know, he's not a particularly explosive player, but he gets to the rim against a lot of guys, like, against teams and in situations where you just don't think he's going to get a shot within 3 feet of the hoop. He manages to, so that's really impressive as well.
It's like a quickness, but glad good for Coby White. But I'm with you, though, he'll probably end up being dropped in droves once the cold, you know, he's due to regress with his hot shooting for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I kind of feel like this version of Coby White, like, rookie year version of Coby White, is probably going to finish the season with a shooting percentage somewhere in that 37 to 39 range, because he takes some bad shots. Like, if he gets going, if he hits a couple, like, he's going to take a shot that nobody, no coach in their right mind would sanction. Like, I don't know. He makes some questionable decisions out there, but it's fun when it all goes down.
For sure. So all right, we'll talk some pickups.
Coby White being the obvious ad of the week. I know you just recorded a segment the other day. Who else are your priority ads this week?
Yeah, we talked Shake Milton on this pod. The guys I recorded with some bigs, and they didn't have great games right after I recorded, but Naz Reid in Minnesota, Harry Giles in Sacramento is widely available, but Rashawn Holmes and Bagley are both hurt, and he's a young guy, you know, that Duke product. If his knees are okay, they might just unleash him, and he's an interesting guy. And Gorgui Dieng is my number one priority, did not have a great game last night, but I mean, he's averaged 1.8 steals, 2 blocks, 2.1 threes per 36 minutes. He could be a sneaky, like, third or fourth round value guy with all those injuries. I mean, because Jaren Jackson Jr. went down and everyone's like, you know, Brandon Clark's gonna be a monster, then he got hurt. So for the next two, three weeks, Gorgui Dieng, despite his, you know, his not great game last night, he's the guy that should be on all fantasy rosters. And then two others, Cam Reddish, He was playing well. Then DeAndre Hunter came back. But now with Dedmon out, he may see more time at the four. And it looks like a light bulb has clicked there. He's been far better the last couple weeks. So Cam Reddish still available in 70% of Yahoo leagues. And finally, Kevin Porter Jr., they might unleash him in Cleveland. He's still available in nearly 80% of leagues. And not Malik Monk, by the way. He was the guy that was leading this list for the last week or two. And when I recorded the video, I'm like, Devontae Graham is slumping. Malik Monk even got a start over him. And literally 2 minutes after we stopped recording that, it's like he's suspended weirdly, too. It's unclear why.
It was some sort of drug-related suspension. We don't know exactly what it is just yet. But all of a sudden, the NBA catching people, right? Like we talked about this early in the season. It's been Ayton. Who else got popped? Who am I blanking on?
John
here?
Collins.
Collins, Ayton, and now Monk. So really surprising. And he'd been a really good story for the last month or so. So that's a bummer. I'm gonna throw a handful of other names at you from the most added list. I'm only gonna throw names at you that I myself have been considering as ads and haven't pulled the trigger yet in various leagues. What are your thoughts on I've added and dropped this guy already like two or three times this year. Michael Porter Jr. making his way back onto the most added list. Just had a 13.8 rebound game, not playing a ton of minutes for Denver. Talent is obvious, maybe the floor time is not.
Yeah, it just depends on how deep your league is, but I have not made a priority to rush to get him this year. I just think it's just going to be too inconsistent. He'll show flashes. I'm impressed. I think he's going to be a player in this league for a while, particularly his rebounding, but I don't know. He's just going to be unreliable.
I thought Tristan Thompson was just a straight drop after the Drummond ad, but we've seen him on the floor with Drummond occasionally. He's put together a series of double doubles. Is he in your view must add, must own?
This is so dependent. It's Larry Nance is the same thing. I mean, if he's droppable, then he's putting up big numbers off the bench. I mean, I think his love will eventually get shut down. So if you can afford to stash Thompson and Nance, I would do both. Andre Drummond, that whole situation there, the defensive stats since they've come over. That's a mess, the future there.
Yeah. One other name I want to throw at you, just because it's a player you already mentioned, that's DeAndre Hunter. Hunter's available in over 70% of Yahoo leagues right now. The raw numbers are often quite good. He's not a great shooter, I know that. But he's kind of been filling the box score a little bit.
Yep, he's another guy to definitely keep your eye on as well. I said Cam Reddish. And then another one I would say I see on this list too, Justin Holiday there in with the Pacers with Jeremy Lamb going down. There's a situation there. Let's see. I know I've gotten some questions about drop Oladipo. I'm like, no, I know it's been so frustrating, but theoretically he'll get better the more, you know, his legs get underneath him. And now with Lamb freeing up some minutes as well.
I like that you mentioned that because I've seen a couple of do I drop Oladipo questions myself. And I just like the thing I guess that I come back to is your ceiling for Oladipo to me just seems so much higher than any of the names that you're going to commonly find on the wire in any fantasy league. Like even if it's bad, even if you have to bench him for stretches for a week at a time, 2 weeks at a time, it's really hard for me to let him go. Like we knew it wasn't going to be pretty necessarily when he came back from a near catastrophic injury.
Yep. No, I agree. And I want to reiterate Naz Reid real quick, too, because he's getting dropped in a lot of leagues, too. And I keep I think the latest blurbs are mentioning just on RotoWorld, just like James Johnson. But I still think on a per 36 minutes, you look at him and he has upside there. And who knows with the situation in town. So, Naz Reid, I think, is another interesting guy there to at least keep your eye on. And he's probably widely available at this
point. Well, the town situation doesn't seem great at all. And there's probably room for both him and James Johnson to do a little something. Like, what's the... James Johnson is a fine deep league play, I think, right? Like somebody who can go 12, 5-5 any night, but that's very close to his floor and ceiling, right? Like he's not gonna have a big blow up game. Like James Johnson isn't going for 35 and 15 or anything like that. It's never happening.
Right. And if you're in the category stats, you know, Naz Reid gets the blocks and whatnot could help you there. But Malik Beasley has been a total monster since coming over there too. He's been a huge beneficiary and should continue to be.
Well, let's get to our In Case You Missed It, and I want to start with some partner content from our friend Ryan Knaus at RotoWorld. He wrote about, like, this isn't for everyone, but he wrote about fantasy playoff schedules, and he just sort of went team by team, took a look at who has basically not even like a strength of schedule thing so much as who's got the most games played, which is obviously huge as we get into the final weeks of the season. How much do you look at stuff like this? I guess, first of all, I'll start there.
Not enough myself. I don't pay attention to it enough because the my bigger money leagues aren't head-to-head, so it doesn't matter to me as much. But this is a really good article. You're right. I highly recommend it. There's some interesting stuff. Before we get into it further, what about you, Andy? Do you pay close attention to it?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I play a lot of head-to-head. I just prefer the format. The thing is, it's so contextual because if you're just scrapping to get into the playoffs, like, right, you just got to be one of those four teams.
Totally.
You can't waste your time on stuff like this, right? Like, you gotta win now. Like, I can't. I'm in a league. In fact, both of the head-to-head leagues that I probably care most about, I'm well positioned, but I'm not so well positioned that I can start thinking about what the schedule looks like in April and late March. Like, I gotta win. I'm hanging on to fourth in one, and I'm hanging on to sixth in another. And I, like, they're both situations where I have a chance to vault up a little bit, and I should make the playoffs, but it's not so guaranteed that I can carry a guy who's not playing, or I can carry a guy simply for the fact that he has a couple of four game weeks in late March. I'm not there now. Like, this is one of those things where, like, it's a rich get richer situation, because if you are extremely well positioned, you're the one seed in the playoffs right now, and nothing seems to be able to derail your season. Like, yeah, you should be looking for opportunities to scoop up players. I'm looking at Ryan's article right now, and the teams that really jump out, the Spurs are going to have 1, 2, 3, 4 game weeks and a couple of 3-game weeks over the final 7. That's huge. Basically, every team plays just 2 games in the final week, so you can kind of throw that out. Spurs have a ton of 4-gamers. The Pistons got like 1 4-game week. The Pistons are actually really short on games. So if you've been riding Christian Wood, that's a bit of a thing, right? They've got a 2-game week when you don't need it, and then they've got just a bunch of threes, and so you have a real like over the final month of the season, that's going to cost you like 4 or 5 games. It's a huge deal.
Yeah, a lot can change. It's like, oh man, who can predict what's going to happen? But really, I believe he quotes Dr. A in this column, and he calls basically games played should be a category, and he's totally right. I mean, come down to that. If you look at your opponent and the head-to-head, I mean, that's the first thing you realize. I mean, obviously projected points, but the games played, it's huge. So yes, this stuff does matter. And the teams that Ryan suggests you avoid are the Mavs, Pistons, and Blazers. And you mentioned it, the positive ones are the Lakers, Wolves, Spurs, Jazz, Wizards, and Celtics. And man, Jason Tatum, just if you watched him lately, growing confidence, hit 8 threes the other night, just step back. LeBron James called him an absolute problem. His numbers in February just look silly. Jason Tatum's still 21 years old.
Oh yeah, it's crazy. He's absolutely filthy. And especially lately. Let me ask you, 2-game weeks, star players in 2-game weeks, what is the caliber of player that you just like set it and forget it? There's no way I'm benching him even in a 2-gamer. Like, that is a thing that I struggle with from time to time.
It is totally tough, and I'll give you a cheat code. Go to our friends at Basketball Monster, and Josh Lloyd projects it out for the week. So Josh Lloyd's great. Fill-in. I should call you Wally Pip. Capable fill-in Josh Lloyd from the podcast last week.
More than capable.
Yeah, and he does a great job of that. So honestly, that's why I look at his projection. He projects out the week, and that helps, because you're totally right, man. It is difficult to compare the games played versus these players. And you want to get even more in-depth. Obviously, you look at your opponent, too, and you see what categories you're really going after.
Yeah, that's the thing. You really do have to look at matchups and where you think you're going to be light and where you think you're going to be heavy on stats. You got anything in case you missed it this week?
Yeah, I actually do have two of them. One, Kawhi Leonard was caught by TMZ on Cabo during the All-Star break vacation wearing his own jersey. I just love Kawhi Leonard. I mean, there's pictures of him wearing his own jersey. Well, I mean, the guy is the best. I mean, other people that would look obnoxious, not him. That's endearing and amazing. And then on a more serious note, the Players Tribune, Ben Gordon had a fantastic article about mental health And it was great. And it's really well worth reading. I know you're a Gordon fan. So
yeah, it was really good. That is one of my all time favorite play. Like when you think about guys that weren't necessarily like all-star, although Ben Gordon should have been an all-star many times over. But you think about players that are maybe not quite all-star caliber that you just like, I just adore Ben Gordon. He's just one of my all time favorite, not even Bulls, just one of my all time favorite NBA players. And he's sort of in that, we've talked about it before. He's in that list of guys to me who like, if he just came up today, what a stud he'd be. Cause he was like every season of his Bulls career, he was a 40%+ 3-point shooter in an era when he may only take 3 a game. Today, be taking 12 a game.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And really just, he opens up and it's interesting stuff and really, really well worth reading. Good stuff, Andy, man. Glad to have you back, man.
Ah, it's good to be back. I'm actually like, there's one other piece that I want to shout out that I was just reading this morning. Kevin Pelton did a great thing on Kristaps Porzingis and the Dallas offense and all of the criticism of Porzingis not posting up. I just thought it was really interesting. Gets into the math of it, gets into the like sort of Mavs offensive philosophy. It was really good. Like, it's pretty clear that Porzingis, especially with the caliber of post-up player that he is right now, should not be posting up. It is not efficient offense in the NBA and is certainly not what the Mavs are trying to do. And the Mavs have been like historically good offensively. Like, it is not a problem. They don't have any offensive problems. So anyway, it was a really good piece. Gets not too deep into the math, but I thought it was super interesting.
Yeah, the Mavs number one in offensive efficiency and Luka leading the NBA in usage rate by a wide margin. So, I'd keep the ball in his hands.
I'm pretty sure I'm seeing Dallas in Chicago next week. I'm pretty excited about that.
Oh, nice. Definitely. That'll be fun for sure. Yeah, sick.
Yeah, that'll do it. The only the other thing I want to shout out is the Fantasy Baseball Podcast, which made its triumphant return just a few days ago with Scott Pianowski and Fred Zinke. Please check that out. Subscribe. It's great. They dealt with the whole issue of what on earth we do with the Lion, Cheating Astros in fantasy baseball leagues in 2020. That was pretty good. So that pod is back and y'all should be subscribing. And with that, we will be back next week. Of course, please subscribe to us. Maybe give us a nice review on Apple Podcasts. Tell a friend about the show. You can follow any of us on Twitter. I am at Andy Behrens. He is at Dalton Del Don. Also, please follow the at Yahoo Fantasy account. That is it for another week. Thanks to our producer, Raghu. We are out.